Wanted to start out by thanking everyone for listening to these episodes. Brian and I are extremely humbled that everyone keeps tuning in and listening. Remember to subscribe if you haven't already and tell your friends. Welcome, 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 Real Stories Podcast listeners, to another episode of the Real Stories Podcast with Graham
and Brian.
Well, we're back, Brian.
We are. It's good to be back in the studio. It's been a little while.
Yeah, this was a Christmas wrapping station for quite a while, and we've been, you know, working on some other stuff.
Yeah.
And getting you know, record players set up. And
hey,
you know,
sometimes life just gets in the way.
It does.
Sorry to keep these riveting stories from our listeners, but we're back.
Yeah, we're back with them, and we actually think we have some pretty good ones coming up. Maybe a multi-episode one.
Let's start with this one. Why don't you tell the listeners where we're headed with it?
So this is the story of a girl named Cynthia File, from New York, who I think people, our listeners, will know, even if they don't know her name.
You'll certainly know her story, or at least you think you'll know her story.
Yes, and this is a great, I think this is a classic real story that includes Wyandotte County and really a little bit of Ohio in it. It goes all through the little bit of Midwest, a little bit of East Coast, and is a great story.
So how does Westchester County in New York, how does that relate to Wyandotte County, Ohio?
Yeah, well, people move all over the place.
They do.
Sometimes people travel and people end up in weird places that they never thought they'd be.
They do.
And I think this story of a young girl, 19 years old, named Cynthia File, I think is a perfect example of that. I don't think she ever thought she was going to end up in Upper Sandusky, but she did.
Well, she did, and she didn't even know it.
So. That's right. Okay. Well, with that being said, let's get to the episode. All right. Okay, so yeah, we're going to get into the story of a girl named Cynthia File. This is the real story of Cynthia File.
As Fraulein Maria says, let's start at the very beginning because it's a very good place to start.
Agreed. Yeah. So Cynthia File is a girl. She's born on April 23rd, 1934, in a town called White Plains, New York, which is just a little, you're more familiar with New York, but I'm thinking like it's like 30 or 40 miles north of the city, right?
I don't even know if it's that far.
Might not be.
But it's north of the Bronx. So if you're in downtown Manhattan, you're headed north. I think the commuter rail line runs up there.
Yeah, you can take Broadway way up there, and
yeah,
then you got to take a right at a certain point, and you'll be in Westchester County, New York, and you know, just north of like Yonkers, New Rochelle. And this girl was born there, and she's German. The File is German; it's a German name, which means arrow.
Okay,
so I don't know. Maybe her, you know, great grandpa was a bow, or you know, some distant relative was a marksman, or
I'd venture to say it's probably a bastardized version of some German word that she said while she was coming through Ellis Island. But
yeah, that's true.
Could be an archer. We don't know.
An archer. I couldn't think of that word. But yeah, it's a cute little town. In at that time, her parents, German immigrants, were, you know, came over. Her father came over in the 1920s, owned an automobile shop.
Post World War One.
Yeah. So I, you know, just think of that, like, owning, you know, he's working on Model T Fords and early automobiles.
Yeah.
And even to be a mechanic and understand automobiles at that time is pretty cool.
You're a tinkerer.
Yeah, for sure. And, but he did well. He did well enough that by the time she was born, they owned a home. And then when she was about 10, they bought a new home, still up there in that area. Her dad's name was Robert File.
And that's P-F-E-I-L, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
P-F-E-I-L. Robert File, in the 1940 census, he has that he was self-employed as an auto mechanic, worked 75 hours a week.
Yeah, well, a small life of a small business owner, right?
Yeah, yep. He's married to Rose. Rose File was a classic sort of 1940s, 1950s housewife. She didn't work. She stayed home and raised the two kids, Cynthia, and Cynthia had an older brother named Robert, but they called him Bob. She was 3.5 years older than him. And Cynthia grew up nice, normal household. She was very subservient to her father. She was a pretty classic, classic American kid. She was on the Tigerettes drill team, you know, that comes out before the football team plays and marches and does all that stuff. She, you know, made her own clothes. She actually made her own dresses. She had made, was one of her hobbies was making dresses, making pants. She made her own blouses, and was really good at it. The ones that that I know about were almost professionally made from what I've read.
So keep in mind, you know, the listeners might be thinking, oh, well, she's in New York, right? Not far from the city. But this is White Plains, New York. Okay. This is like a small town north of the city. It'd be like living in Upper Sandusky at the time.
Yeah. Probably something like that, right? So just a small town girl, right? She goes to high school. She's a pretty normal girl. She lives in a split level home that her parents had paid for. She's a member of her, you know, high school. She's in several clubs. Again, she's making her own clothes. She's very good. Her parents, they have a good relationship. She's got a good relationship with her brother. And, she grows up normal American childhood. She gets to, you know, out of high school, and her brother had gone to Ohio Wesleyan in Delaware, and she wanted to follow him. He was a chemistry major there and had just graduated.
He was an owl.
He was an owl, yes. And, you know, all of us, if you've driven down to Columbus, you drive by Ohio Wesleyan. If you go to Delaware, downtown Delaware, I mean, it's right there.
You've definitely seen the football stadium on the right-hand side.
The football stadium is right there. Yep. And that'll come back. That's part of the story.
Foreshadowing.
Yes. So Cynthia goes to Ohio Wesleyan. Ohio Wesleyan's a Methodist school founded in 1842. If we want to get into it, those Wesleyan schools were very much like, there were religious schools and founded by religious groups. And that was sort of how they got funding. And it's a pretty nice school. I mean, Ohio Wesleyan is a good, good quality school. Like
still a good school.
Yeah. I actually looked this up. It cost them $10,000 to start that university. In the 1840s.
To start the university.
Yeah. Okay. Like $10,000, they got it going. Oof. But she goes to Ohio Wesleyan. She's going to go there. She's a home ec major. What you got over there?
They are not the owls.
Oh, okay.
I thought they were for some reason. They're the battling bishops.
The battling bishops.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's even better.
It is. It's a great name.
Yeah, so, you know, there was a former mansion house there that they turned into Elliott Hall, which is the old main building down there at Ohio Wesleyan.
And then the Stuyvesant Hall was built in 1930. That's the residence on West Campus.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So she goes there. She the first day at Ohio Wesleyan, they have what's called the Day on the J. Which is like a celebration for the entire campus. They get together, students, faculty, and staff all come together. There's food and all sorts of good stuff going on down there. On this first day, it was September 1952. Cynthia is at this freshman mixer down at Ohio Wesleyan, and she meets a guy.
So this is like the first, when all the freshmen are coming in. All the freshmen are new to school. They don't really know anybody.
Yeah. And just imagine that. I mean, we've done it.
Yeah. If you've been to college, if you did anything like that, it's like the initiation kind of celebration.
Yeah. If you ever went to 4-H camp or wherever, basketball camp, there's that first day where you get there and you don't know who anyone is. And so ideally you meet somebody, you know, you make eye contact. You're like, oh, this person looks cool. I'll talk to them. And she meets a guy named Roy Schneigel.
Roy.
And old Roy. So
where's Roy from?
They're actually introduced. Roy is from Roy's from the Cleveland area. Mm-hmm. Mayfield Heights, to be exact. And he's a good smart kid. He'd gone to Mayfield Heights High School, was a baseball player there and all-American kid, good-looking kid. Everybody loved him. Had girlfriends all the time. Roy, since he'd been 14, was pretty much always dating a pretty girl. He was a four-year letterman in baseball. He's got golden brown hair, Auburn type hair. He has
basically, this is a guy that just kind of walked out of a Life magazine.
He did. Actually, he ended up being a member of the ROTC there, and people said he wore the uniform exactly the way it was meant to be worn.
Yeah.
So she meets a beau. She meets a bohunk of a guy. And so Roy, who's a smart kid, was an all-A student in high school, was his class vice president. Even a lot of people say that, he's one of the best-dressed kids in his school. And old Cynthia meets him, and it's from what we know, it's love at first sight. These guys hit it off pretty well.
First day of school. Yes. Big party. Meet a cute young freshman.
Yeah.
Yep.
He comes from a good family.
It's a story as old as time.
It is a story as old as time. And he comes from a great family. His father, Roy Sr., was an engineer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Cleveland Plain Dealer is one of the older newspapers in Cleveland.
Still one of the better ones.
And still one of the better ones. Yeah, for sure.
Or at least one of the biggest distribution.
But by this time, so we're talking 1952, so 1952, you've got the, Korean War is going on, almost over, really. And lots of other, there's a lot going on in the 50s. People look back on the 50s like they're this sort of nostalgia. There's a lot of nostalgia around it. But there was a lot of unrest going on in the 1950s.
It was post-war enough that there was still kind of a good feeling about it. But you have to understand that this time, communism was becoming a threat.
For sure.
You can't see me, but I'm using the air quotes.
Yes. It was a real threat, Brian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for better or worse, that I'm indifferent to that. But I guess what I'm saying is that it was a perceived threat to the nation. McCarthyism was coming around. I mean, it was J. Edgar Hoover was
for sure
really instrumental in weeding it out.
Yeah. So. Harry Truman's the president still. Eisenhower comes in the next year. I mean, it's right before Elizabeth II is crowned the Queen of England.
1953 is the last year of the Korean conflict.
Too. Yes.
So it's that's ended.
The polio vaccine had not been discovered. <Yeah. laughs> So, there's some things going on there. No color TV yet in 1952. Oh,
geez.
Color TV was 1953. No Corvette yet.
No.
The Corvette was 1953. No Mustang. Yeah. So, I mean, there's it's just an interesting time.
A lot of the things that we think of today did not exist then.
At that time, yeah. So when you meet this handsome guy, it's going to work. So they meet, and it's a pretty hot and heavy love story right from the beginning. Roy and Cynthia start hanging out all the time. They end up changing their classes so that they can take a few classes together. They take a European history class together.
Let's talk about Cynthia's degree real quick. What was it in?
Yeah. So Cynthia was majoring in home economics.
Home economics. And sometimes today we refer to that as the MRS degree.
Yeah, perhaps.
For a husband.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I think from what I've read about Cynthia, her goal was to go there and find a husband.
Yeah.
She wasn't super academically interested in school. She was interested in going there and being a part of the social scene and finding somebody.
Sure. And there's nothing against, I'm not saying anything bad about domestication.
And certainly not all women did that. That definitely seems to be what she was interested in.
It was still 1953, so her going to college in the first place is kind of a novel thing.
Yeah. Anyway. So her brother had gone there, and her mom and dad, her dad made good money, but was a hardworking, they were blue collar. Mom didn't work, but they wanted to give Cynthia the same opportunities that they'd given to her older brother, Bob. And so she had gone to visit Bob there on drop off when Bob was a freshman. And she immediately, as a freshman in high school, was like, that's what I want to do. I want to go there. As far as I know, she didn't visit any other campuses. That was just what she always knew she wanted to do.
Well, her brother, like you said, her brother had been there. He had graduated. He was living in Columbus, right? So he was close.
Yeah.
There was family there. He was familiar with the campus. She may have even been there a few times visiting, so it felt comfortable to her as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, back to, Roy, who's this kind of all-American kid, he's majoring. He actually kind of bounced around. He was going to major in education, but really thought he wanted to eventually become a minister. And so he's a Methodist. He's born. His mom is a Protestant and his dad is a Russian Orthodox. And they didn't even give him a middle name. Do you want to know what his middle name was, Brian?
I know it, but why don't you tell the listeners?
His middle name, he gives himself when he's 9 years old.
Oh, he was nine?
He's 9 years old. He was baptized Catholic because they kind of found a Catholic church there that they liked.
Well, it's Mayfield Heights.
And he's baptized Catholic, and he gives himself the middle name, Rogers. So he's Roy Rogers.
Roy Rogers.
Schneigel. Which is, classic. So anyway, so he's this 19-year-old kid. He's at school. He's doing his thing. And they meet. They start taking classes together. He was a pretty kind of spoiled kid, had great clothes. His mom worked a job at a bakery. And she had told her neighbors she worked this job at the bakery so she could afford to spend money on Roy, her only child, their only child. There was a story about Roy where she talked to the mom, would talk to their neighbors, and the neighbors said she never mentioned their dad. She only would talk about Roy.
I think the story that I remember hearing was that the neighbors weren't even sure what he did.
Correct.
Yeah. Because she only ever spoke of Roy Jr.
Yes. And I mean, my mom liked me. I mean, my mom liked me and it was great, but there were times, I think in Roy's life where his mom was a little overbearing.
Yeah, probably.
And,
not a tiger mom so much as just I don't know what the helicopter mom, is that what the,
yeah, she might have been, now? She might have been like a helicopter mom in the 1950s.
Right.
Which probably was way different than a helicopter mom today. Taking him to baseball games and all that stuff and making sure he had all the best clothes. He had, 17 pair of slacks when he was in high school. And that was a lot for a kid in the 1950s.
Honestly, there were kids then that probably didn't have three pair of slacks. And one of them they wore to church.
There's an article written about him that basically says this kid is like a young stud. This is who you want your daughter to meet.
He's a catch.
Yep. He seems to have his head on straight. He's religious. He's got, that good old fear of God in him and maybe even wants to be a minister. Maybe wants to be a teacher, but either way, things seem pretty good. And they go through that first year of college together. He and Cynthia spend a lot of time together. Her roommates say she pretty much once they met, that was what she did. She hung out at Roy's
school. She wasn't doing well.
Correct. Didn't do very well. And they go through that year of school. They get through it. And at the end of the year, they informed her that she would not be coming back in the fall.
I'm laughing at that because I got a very similar letter from the Ohio State University my freshman year.
Yeah. So. Roy, he did struggle a little bit. He actually had to get some meetings with counselors, and one of his professors said, hey, you were doing great at the beginning of the year, and now you just seem checked out. What's going on? And they're just, couple kids in love, right? Trying to make it happen. And as far as we know, they're, still have not, had intimate relations because they're waiting for marriage and all that stuff. But they were in love. Yeah. These were a couple kids in love as they go into their first summer together, the summer of 1953. And we'll take a quick break, Brian, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what happens in the summer of 1953.
Hey, everyone. Just wanted to give a quick plug for Brian and I's website, realstoriespodcast.com. We appreciate everybody that goes there and checks it out. There is a place to donate there. We get a few donations, and we appreciate everybody that does. Back to the show.
All right, we're back. Brian, where were we?
So when we left Cynthia and Roy, it was the end of the semester, so it was springtime, and he had rushed, or he had pledged fraternity.
We forgot to mention that he had rushed Delta Tie Delta and couldn't get in because his grades weren't good enough.
And she also had pledged the sister sorority to the fraternity. And when Roy did not get accepted, or rather was put on kind of this academic probation where they said, you know, you need to bring your grades up. At that point, she withdrew her application from the sorority.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, there's just some things going on there that are some, you know,
there's a lot of moving pieces in this.
There are. Yeah. And so they go home for the summer, mm-hmm. and they talk, and they're like, here's what we're going to do. You know, Roy had gone to visit them, visit her family that year in White Plains. You know, she was worried he was going to be jealous of her ex-boyfriend's picture. She remembered she had a picture of him still in her bedroom and wanted to make sure that picture was gone. You know, so they had met and they already kind of knew the mom and dad knew each other. The mom really liked him. Cynthia had met his parents at Thanksgiving, actually right away. You know, Cynthia had gone.
Oh, they had just started dating that Thanksgiving. They had like 2 months, 3 months.
They had just started dating, and Cynthia told her mom that, you know, she wasn't going to make it home for Thanksgiving because she was going to go see his family.
Yeah.
And it made her dad a little bit jealous. He wrote a letter back to her and said he was, you know, like a little disappointed that he'd choose, you know, a boy's family over her family. And
well, in her defense, it's the difference between a 3 hour car ride or a 2 hour car, probably a 3 hour car ride back then, and a 14 hour train ride.
Oh,
or
yeah.
16 hour train ride
for sure.
For a long weekend.
Yep. So it's a no brainer. So they knew each other's families a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that summer, they set up a plan, to sort of talk to their moms and dads.
A scheme yeah.
to talk to their parents and tell them like, hey, look, we're thinking about getting married, you know, soon.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this fall if we can. And so the immediate conversation, was not good with both parents.
Right.
His mom, who again, she's got this plan for him.
You know,
a doting mother. He's not ready to be married. This girl's not ready to be married. They're too young.
You have to finish school.
Yeah, finish school. Then I think that's the classic thing, right? And she talked to her parents, and her parents also not on board. Thought that she needed to get her act together. She, you know, didn't do well in school. That's no reason to just rush off and get married.
Yeah, at this point, she had not really proven to her parents that she was even mature enough to be married.
Like
she was not really presenting herself well. She wasn't doing well in school. She didn't have a job. She wasn't doing any of the things that your typical adult would be doing.
Correct. And also a departure from the way she had been. I mean, she was like a great babysitter in high school. She always got along really well with her parents. And now all of a sudden here she is, not coming home for Thanksgiving. And they're just a little concerned about this relationship. And so they don't want it to happen. So they plan. She invites Roy to her house for the 4th of July, 1953. Roy, who I should have mentioned this earlier, but his nickname is Skip. So Skip goes to White Plains to ask her mom and dad for their blessing for him to ask her to marry her. And they say, no, you're both too young. And I think that's the point where like, whoa, we have a plan here. We thought this was going to work. Isn't this how it works? The guy asks the dad and the dad says yes, but the dad says no. And so they begin talking and secretly they think, well, I know what they can't stop.
Here's an easy way to create a union.
An easy way for them to let us get married is that I will get pregnant. We'll get pregnant. And what are they going to do then? And so
mom and dad will have to say yes.
From a letter that she wrote to one of her friends, they became intimate over that weekend when he was home. And so they even worked out a budget. They worked out how he was going to work. He was going to get a job as a jumper at a department store, based like a delivery driver.
A delivery driver, yeah.
Or I think the rider, right? Like there'd be a driver and then he'd be in the truck and he'd jump out kind of like a UPS jumper.
So like
jumper.
The UPS seasonal help, essentially.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing.
Right.
And he got a job at a department store in Cleveland for the summer. He made $50 a week. He thought if he could, this is interesting, he made $50 a week. Mm-hmm. And if he could get a full-time gig there as a full-time route driver, he would make $85 a week.
A week.
Yeah. So he starts working. He's back in Cleveland. She's still in White Plains. He is working. He gets a letter from her. It was not dated, but it seemed to be sometime in late July that she's pregnant. And
didn't take long.
It didn't take long, which I'm interested in that timeline.
The timing is suspicious, but you know we only know what's printed, I guess.
Agreed. She was pregnant.
Yeah.
So we do know eventually she is pregnant.
Yeah. We find out later.
So things begin to escalate. Millie Schneigel, which is Roy's mom, writes a special delivery letter. You know, a certified letter to the File family. Cause she, this is another side story. She reads all of Skip's mail when it comes in the mail. She opens it and reads it and then gives it to him. So she reads the letter, that Cynthia is pregnant.
Keep in mind, this is not an 8-year-old.
No. Yeah. This is her little boy.
He's
Skip.
19.
This is Skip.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she reads the letters and she's a thing. I think, Millie is a thing. So she demands to know if Cynthia is pregnant and explicitly says that the two cannot marry until after Roy graduates, even if she is pregnant.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, and in the 1950s, to tell somebody like, you're going to have this baby out of wedlock, like you are not, this is not going to be.
Well, it was scandalous for sure, but it did happen. Like let's not pull the wool over everybody's eyes. Like throughout history, people have been having babies out of wedlock.
Oh, for sure.
The nice thing about this situation is that, or the normal thing I think about this situation is that neither of them lived in their hometowns. So there was no shame on the family for having a baby out of wedlock at that point. Because wherever they were going to live, probably Columbus, they would just blend in.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and Columbus at that time was a fairly large city still.
Sure.
So
yeah. Also, I mean, from what we're going to find out, they're not going to listen to what their parents want.
Anyway. Yeah, right.
So they're going to do what they want.
They've got their own plan.
They have their own plan. Cynthia tells her mom, like flat, just denies being pregnant. She says they've never had sex. Roy then writes a letter to Cynthia's parents that's, you know, hey, look, we have not had sex. There's no possible way that she's pregnant. And so that's, you know, where we're looking in late July of 1953. That summer was a strained summer at the File household. Her dad, Robert, who they'd always had a good relationship, she's becoming defiant. She's not listening to his orders as much as she used to. She seemed to have been a very like pacifistic kid, right? She had always done what her mom and dad asked her. And now she's not doing everything that they're asking her to do.
She's feeling her way through life as an adult.
Yes, exactly. Know? Yeah, she's growing up.
Yeah.
That summer, her dad suggests, he's like, look, I'm not saying you can't ever marry Roy, but you know, maybe you need to get a job and you need to kind of have your own thing. I think a little worried that she was a little too into Roy.
Yeah.
It was a little too much. He didn't like it. And so he wanted her to go get a job and thought maybe that'll take the heat off, make some friends, and you know, make your own little money and do something. You know, you can make your own life. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, at some point, she's got to learn how to do that if she's not going to be with Roy anyway.
Correct.
She's got to be self-sufficient.
Yes. Her and Roy start writing a lot of letters back and forth over the summer. And the letters that they're writing back and forth are getting, you know, more definitely almost desperate is the thing. And Cynthia's mom finally says, look, you have to break up with him. He's making you crazy. Like you can't have you being this way.
She becomes obsessed.
She was. And so she, in front of her mom, writes a letter and asks Roy to never call or write her again. And in the letter sends back his fraternity pin.
Oh,
which is big doings. Yeah. You know, you send the fraternity pin back.
Send him back somebody's class ring or I guess there's nothing comparable by today's standards, but
exactly.
Blocking their contact, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. She also, without telling her parents, writes a letter to Baldwin Wallace. Her dad had asked her to apply to Baldwin Wallace, which she did. But she writes a letter to Baldwin Wallace asking them to disregard her application for admission because she's had a change of plans. Hmm. So what those plans are, we don't know, but she's you know breaking up with Roy by this letter, and she's dropping out of college altogether. However, at the same day, she goes over to her friend's house, a girl named Carolyn Scheid, who's one of her good friends, lives right down the road. She writes a second letter to Roy and says, hey, disregard that letter that I wrote. Here's what really happened. My mom made me write that letter. Send all your letters from now on to Carolyn's house. Mm-hmm. And they continue their correspondence through the summer. But for her parents, she's kind of like, okay, mom and dad, I'm going to do what you want me to do.
She's putting on a good front. So at that point, her mom decides, okay, you have to get a job. We've found you this job at Lazard's.
No, it's a department store.
Yeah.
And I can't find what department store it was, but it was at a Lazard's lingerie department. In a department store in White Plains.
So she's going to sell undergarments in a department store. So her mom takes her out and says, you need better clothes. If you're going to have a job, you need better clothes. Because at this point, really all she has are saddle shoes, you know, which is typical of a 1950s girl.
Heck
right?
Yeah. Or I still think woman. Saddle shoes are cute.
Yeah, sure they are.
I do like them.
Yeah. But she has to put on a little bit more of a mature front.
Yeah, needs a new dress.
Needs new shoes. Yeah, so mom takes her to the department, takes her out shopping. This is August 22nd of 1953. Okay, it's Friday, August 22nd, 1953. Her first day of work is Monday, August 24th, 1953.
Correct.
Okay, so mom is shopping with her, takes her shopping. They find a nice dress, and they find a pair of slippers.
Ooh, a pair of slippers. What color were those slippers, Brian?
They were red.
Okay, listeners. Hey, thanks for joining in on this first episode of three-part series on the real story of Cynthia File.
Yeah.
And maybe you've figured out by now, if you know this story, what this story's about.
I think most people from Wyandotte County, or at least from Upper Sandusky, are familiar with the Red Slipper murder.
Yeah, if you've ever, you know, if you know what the Red Slipper murder case is, you maybe have gotten the idea that that's where we're heading with this story.
You may not have even known that the victim's name in that case was Cynthia.
Correct. What we're trying to do... We want this story to be about Cynthia.
Graham and I struggled for a long time putting this one together. And the reason being is because we needed to make sure that it was done right.
And we wanted to tell her story. We tell real stories.
We tell real stories.
And we want the story not to be about a murder, although that's where we're going. And episode, you're gonna find out about a murder.
Yeah.
But we wanted to make sure that we knew that Cynthia was just a typical girl. You know, she wasn't perfect. She had some flaws, but she also was, from all we know, a great young kid.
But the story is worth telling, and we wanted to make sure that we started at the beginning.
Yeah, so we hope everyone will join us in episode 2 of The Real Story of Cynthia File. Should be out sometime soon. And we will track to Wyandotte County, Ohio, where...
Dean McAllister and Harold Roth try to solve the murder of what becomes known around the country and the newspapers around the country as the Red Slipper Murder. Special thanks to Charlotte Lee's 1983 folklore class for the great publication they've done on this, and for all the people. We've interviewed a few people from that class and really appreciate all the information we've gotten from everyone. Thanks to everyone for listening, everyone for supporting us. We couldn't do it without you.